Have you ever wondered why the charming, attentive man you started dating gradually transforms into someone unrecognizable? This phenomenon, where princes become frogs, isn't just your imagination. It's a pattern so common that relationship expert Alison Armstrong dedicated decades to understanding it, eventually creating the Queen's Code, a revolutionary framework for male-female relationships that has quietly transformed thousands of partnerships worldwide. Armstrong's work has attracted celebrity followers like Tony Robbins and relationship coaches across the country, who credit her insights with saving countless marriages. What makes this approach so powerful is its radical premise. Perhaps women aren't victims of men's disappointing behavior, but unwitting creators of it. Through the story of Kimberly, a successful professional who keeps hitting the same relationship wall, Armstrong reveals how women can stop frog farming and discover the heroic nature of men hiding beneath years of misunderstanding and miscommunication. Kimberly's love life followed a painfully predictable pattern that had haunted her for decades. Men who initially appeared as attentive, charming princes inevitably transformed into distant, disengaged frogs once she became emotionally invested. This destructive cycle first manifested in her marriage to Matthew, where his once passionate pursuit devolved into cold indifference, ultimately ending in divorce. Her subsequent relationship with Brett followed an identical trajectory, leaving her emotionally scarred and increasingly cynical. Her response was to adopt what she considered a foolproof strategy, emotional detachment and calculated invulnerability, though beneath this protective armor, she secretly yearned for genuine connection. At a packed relationship seminar in downtown Seattle, Kimberly witnessed a confrontation that would fundamentally alter her perspective. When an outspoken attendee named Melissa publicly challenged the speaker about why men seemingly devolve from attentive suitors into football-watching, pizza-eating, beer-belching couch slugs, his unexpected response electrified the room. "You're a frog farmer." The speaker went on to explain a counterintuitive concept. While fairy tales tell us that queens turn frogs into princes, most modern women unknowingly do the opposite, systematically transforming princes into frogs through subtle patterns of criticism, control, and emotional manipulation. This revelation struck Kimberly like a bolt of lightning, forcing her to confront an uncomfortable possibility. Could she be the architect of men's disappointing behavior rather than its victim? Meanwhile, Jack, a charismatic colleague who found himself drawn to Kimberly despite her being frostier than a shaken martini, shared his own frustrations with another coworker. He expressed exhaustion with contemporary women's seemingly impossible expectations, wanting men to simultaneously embody traditionally masculine provider roles while also functioning as emotionally available girlfriends who could match their depth of feeling and expression. Determined to break free from this destructive pattern, Kimberly decided to visit her grandmother, Claudia, a woman whose presence commanded instant respect while maintaining an unmistakable feminine grace. Claudia had always seemed to navigate relationships with an effortless wisdom that Kimberly now desperately sought to understand. What she discovered during this visit was far more profound than simple relationship advice. It was a 500-year family legacy known as the Queen's Code, a comprehensive framework for understanding and relating to men that had been carefully preserved and passed down through generations of women. In a particularly poignant conversation, Claudia revealed why this wisdom had skipped a generation. Kimberly's mother had explicitly rejected these teachings after being abandoned by Kimberly's father during the height of the feminist movement. She had chosen to become a king rather than a queen, viewing traditional feminine wisdom as weakness. Now, Kimberly stood at a crucial crossroads, simultaneously drawn to and terrified by knowledge that promised to fundamentally transform her understanding of men, and perhaps her own role in their transformation.
"You just castrated him," Claudia explained matter-of-factly to her granddaughter. Kimberly was stunned. How could her simple dismissal of her boss's repeated story have such a devastating impact? This was Kimberly's introduction to the concept of emasculation, the ways women unconsciously diminish men's power and confidence. Claudia explained the devastating effects of castration on men. Long term, men will keep their distance instead of seeking intimacy, compete with women instead of cherishing them, approach with suspicion instead of trust, treat women with disdain instead of respect, and relate from fear instead of love. In the immediate aftermath, men experience a sudden loss of power with emotional responses of rage or fury. Though Claudia pointed out that even in these moments, most men demonstrate concern for women's safety by throwing the club away or hitting walls instead of people. When Kimberly asked why women do this, Claudia compassionately explained it's a knee-jerk response out of fear of men's power, and the only way women have to deal with their hurt, disappointment, and frustration. Women emasculate men through various weapons. Hot pins, small, subtle criticisms that diminish men's confidence, like dismissing their stories or correcting them publicly. Stilettos, sharp, pointed comments that pierce deeply, such as comparing them unfavorably to others or questioning their competence. Swords, devastating public humiliations that slice a man's dignity, like mocking his income or sexual performance in front of others. Through careful observation, Kimberly began noticing emasculation everywhere, from mothers comparing sons unfavorably to daughters, to impatient clerks making elderly men fumble more, to wives publicly humiliating husbands about their paychecks. Most disturbing was realizing how normalized such behavior had become. Karen, another student of Claudius, learned from her husband Mike that men constantly seek to impress the women they care about. They feel 10 feet tall when successful or want to crawl away on their belly when unimpressed. Karen was shocked to discover Mike's vulnerability to her reactions, realizing she'd taken his kindness for granted rather than recognizing his intentional efforts to please her. The first step toward transformation was a vow to give up the right to castrate men forever. This didn't mean women would never emasculate men again, but they would stop treating men as if they're misbehaving and deserve punishment. This vow, the foundation of the Queen's Code, created an immediate sense of freedom, joy, and feminine power in both Karen and Kimberly. To a man, nothing is worth doing, but much is worth providing, Bert, Claudia's husband, explained to the astonished women. This statement unlocked the first word in the language of heroes, provide. Claudia explained that men are naturally providers who focus on accomplishing results that have impact, particularly for women they care about. Unlike women's diffuse awareness, noticing everything simultaneously, men have single focus, screening out anything irrelevant to their current goal. This explains why men don't notice household tasks that constantly demand women's attention. The revelation was profound. Tasks like taking out trash hold no inherent value to men unless they understand how providing that service impacts a woman emotionally. When Karen finally articulated how overflowing trash makes her feel hopeless, unsupported, and unloved, Bert was amazed. He explained men need to know what their actions provide emotionally, and they play for points, putting energy where they win the most valuable appreciation. This insight transformed Karen's approach with her husband Mike. Instead of criticizing him for not taking out the trash, she explained what his action would provide emotionally. Mike revealed he measures benefit by whether something gives Karen what she needs, makes her happy, or significantly improves her life. Her happiness is like points on a scoreboard to him. Claudia emphasized that men don't provide because they think women are incapable. They provide because providing gives them purpose and satisfaction. Their desire to provide comes from cherishing women, not underestimating them. By constantly proving self-sufficiency, women inadvertently create competition instead of partnership. The second word in the hero language was help. Bert explained that asking for help connects directly to a man's provider nature. When unable to help, he'll feel disappointed and seek someone who can assist. However, there's a crucial difference between asking for help versus needing to be saved. Men dislike saving women from situations that could have been prevented with proper planning. The women learned that using the language of heroes isn't manipulating men, but communicating effectively in their native tongue, like speaking Spanish in Mexico. True liberation comes when women understand their partners think, speak, and are motivated differently. Touch only the parts of me you want to turn on, Claudia advised, explaining the nuances of physical intimacy. This session focused on the complex dance of sexual connection between men and women, revealing how misunderstandings in this area often create frustration and disconnection. Claudia introduced several key concepts that transformed Karen and Kimberly's understanding of sexuality. Sexy tank fillers, activities that put a woman in her body and make her receptive to pleasure. These differ for everyone, but might include exercise, connection, or relaxation. Pumpkin hours, times when sex simply won't work for someone, whether due to exhaustion, menstruation, or being focused on intense projects. Signals, cues indicating desire that must be correctly interpreted. Karen discovered her signal for intimacy, touching Mike there, had always been misinterpreted as friendly touching, explaining years of misunderstandings. Jump starts, specific words, touches, or phrases that can take someone from 0 to 60 in an instant, which should only be used outside pumpkin hours. Dessert, something pleasurable that's appealing even when not hungry for sex, like actual dessert, which people will eat even when full. End game, how partners leave each other after intimacy, ensuring the other is happy, satisfied, and looking forward to next time. The most profound insight was understanding that men experience sex as essential fuel for protecting and providing. Claudia emphasized that withholding sex effectively frog farms men, while being a sexual partner is part of the Queen's Code. Karen realized with regret how she'd used sex and cooking as revenge, not understanding men's breaking points. When Karen and Mike applied these concepts, their intimate life transformed. They discovered their mutual turn-ons. Karen's physical touch arouses Mike when infused with genuine desire rather than tentative friendliness, while his arousal and verbal expressions of desire serve as jumpstarts for her. Their honest exchange led to immediate intimacy and a deeper connection. For Kimberly, these insights helped her approach intimacy with Jack more thoughtfully. During their phone conversation about sexual partnership, Jack revealed his preference for morning intimacy and his pumpkin hours when sex would be unwelcome. When asked what he needs, Jack responded honestly, respect, trust, appreciation, sexual connection, and to be your hero, a statement that deeply moved Kimberly. Need is the next word in the hero language, Claudia explained, introducing a revolutionary approach to communicating desires. She provided a detailed, step-by-step process for communicating needs to men. 1. Schedule a focused conversation. 2. Acknowledge his provider qualities. 3. Clearly state the need using that specific word. 4. Explain what receiving it would provide emotionally. 5. Ask what he needs to fulfill the request. 6. Inquire about how to show appreciation. This structured approach transforms vague requests into clear communications that align with how men process information. Claudia distinguished between 3 categories of needs that men recognize. Survival needs, food, water, sleep, and sex, men instinctively view sex as survival-related due to genetic continuation. Quality of life needs, activities like car time, golf, or friend time that maintain specific capacities like peace and perspective. Needs people have given up on getting, those that seem impossible to fulfill. Understanding these distinctions helps women determine whether something is a preference or a genuine need, which is crucial when addressing conflicts between competing needs. Karen applied this framework when approaching Mike about meals during her busy school weeks. Following the method, she expressed her heart's desire to have delicious home-cooked meals without being responsible for cooking or grocery shopping during her hectic weeks. She explained this would make her feel supported and special, helping her avoid exhaustion. To her surprise, Mike immediately supported her needs rather than defending his own, acknowledging her exhaustion and offering to coordinate his work schedule around her school commitments. They spent Sunday cooking together, with Mike chopping while she prepared various dishes they portioned into meal-sized containers. All week, Mike handled dinner preparation, packed her lunches, and took care of cleanup. Karen felt like a queen and responded with unprecedented intimacy. Claudia revealed that demands can only be met with resistance or submission, eliminating the possibility of genuine giving. When someone demands something, the recipient either defends themselves or complies resentfully. The queen's approach exists in a different time zone than demands. While demands come from past entitlement, I deserve this because of what I did, the queen's relationship to needs focuses on the future. This would allow me to become. As Claudia explained, you can't deserve a gift. That's what makes it a gift.
I need, I get, Claudia summarized, explaining how men's accountability makes their needs critical and urgent. This often appears as misbehavior to women, like when men grab snacks before dinner is ready or fall asleep during important conversations. Due to single focus, men don't notice growing hunger until reaching a breaking point, unlike women's constant awareness. This applies especially to sex, which men experience as essential fuel for protecting and providing. When men consider themselves accountable for a woman, they treat her needs as critical and urgent too. You need, he gets. However, women must learn to properly communicate their needs using specific language. Without clear communication about what women need and why, men will continue providing what they think women need rather than what women actually need. Claudia taught that women can learn from men's approach to needs. While men treat their needs as critical and urgent, women tend towards self-sacrifice, competing to see who can sacrifice the most. Women often address survival needs at the last possible moment, dismiss quality of life needs as it would be nice, and give up entirely on certain needs. She explained that women's independence hasn't necessarily resulted in getting more of what they need, as they only pursue what they can justify deserving. When women discover needs that must come from others, they try to determine who owes them based on past sacrifices, leading to demands rather than requests. The conversation shifted to what happens when people give up on getting their needs met. When they're unwilling to live without that need any longer, they'll be compelled to find it elsewhere. Karen realized the importance of asking loved ones directly if they've given up on getting something from her. This understanding transformed Kimberly's workplace approach. She successfully negotiated with her boss Raul for the day after month-end off for her team, explaining how month-end exhausts them, leading to mistakes when starting the new month. A day of rest would make them more productive and feel appreciated. Raul agreed to her proposal, impressed by her insights. The soul of a man is inherently heroic, Claudia revealed, introducing the fifth and most powerful word in the language of heroes, hero. She explained that heroism manifests differently through male and female perspectives. Men often associate heroism with grand gestures like saving lives or protecting others, while women recognize heroic qualities in daily acts of support, protection, and provision. Even small gestures like fixing a broken appliance or offering emotional support can be deeply heroic. Claudia emphasized the crucial distinction. Heroism is in the act. Hero is in the acknowledgement. This revelation highlighted how men's noble actions often go unrecognized, not because they're seeking praise, but because society has diminished the importance of acknowledging male contributions. Karen and Kimberly learned that genuine appreciation for men's heroic nature creates a powerful dynamic, one where both parties are elevated through the exchange. The historical context proved enlightening when Karen realized that queens have always been the ones to acknowledge heroes.
This traditional dynamic represented the perfect balance of masculine and feminine power, not as opposing forces, but as complementary energies that enhance each other. Throughout history, great leaders were often supported by those who recognized and acknowledged their heroic qualities. When Kimberly expressed hesitation about using the hero word with her boss, fearing it might make her appear weak, Claudia introduced a transformative concept: strong woman, voluntarily vulnerable. This paradoxical state, being strong enough to show vulnerability, represents the most empowering and attractive quality a woman can embody. Kimberly's subsequent acknowledgement of Raul as her hero demonstrated this principle, creating a profound shift in their professional relationship. The practical application of the hero principle yielded remarkable results. Kimberly discovered that acknowledging the heroic qualities in both Jack and her team members led to deeper, more authentic connections. The workplace dynamics shifted from competitive to collaborative, with team members more willing to support each other. Karen's relationship with Mike evolved into a beautiful dance of mutual support. He became more attentive to her needs, often anticipating them before she expressed them. As their journey culminated, Claudia empowered them to become teachers of the Queen's Code, suggesting they collaborate to share these insights at Kimberly's workplace. This transmission of knowledge represented a significant responsibility, the power to transform other relationships and workplaces through understanding and implementing these principles. Bert's gift of handcrafted music stands, adorned with Claudia's image, symbolized both the artistic beauty and practical application of their learning. The stands served as physical reminders of their transformation and the ongoing journey of acknowledging heroes in their lives. The women's tears upon receiving these gifts reflected not just gratitude for the physical objects, but recognition of their own transformation from students to teachers of this profound wisdom. Their embrace with Bert demonstrated the new comfort they felt in expressing appreciation for male contributions while maintaining their own power and dignity. The Queen's Code journey transformed not only Karen and Kimberly's relationships with men, but their entire approach to life. Karen found herself asking for help sooner rather than needing rescue, while Kimberly decided to get a bigger life, realizing she rarely needed help because she kept her goals small. Their physical appearances transformed as well, with both women appearing softer, more radiant, and feminine. Jack noticed the dramatic change in Kimberly, particularly her wearing a dress instead of her usual suits. Men responded differently to both women, becoming more helpful, attentive, and protective. Not all relationships survived this transformation. Kimberly's friendship with Melissa ended when Melissa weaponized Claudia's teachings, using them to further humiliate her husband Scott. In a painful confrontation, Melissa defended her behavior, but Kimberly responded that partnership, not manipulation, was the point. Melissa's bitter declaration that men are assholes revealed the depth of her resentment and unwillingness to change. Meanwhile, Karen and Mike's marriage blossomed. Mike appreciated the new rhythm with Karen, who now asked for his help in advance, rather than struggling alone until reaching a crisis point. He secretly noted her period was several days late, feeling proud and stuggly about this development. Kimberly and Jack's relationship deepened beyond physical connection. Jack searched online and discovered what appeared to be Kimberly's estranged father in San Diego, though he remained unsure what to do with this information. When Jack arrived at Claudia and Bert's home to meet Claudia's grandparents, Bert took his measure instantly and was satisfied when Jack declared that Kimberly was worth a kingdom. Claudia herself underwent transformation, shifting from provider of training to supportive resource, making Karen and Kimberly accountable for their own learning journey. This change, suggested by Bert, helped restore Claudia's strength after medical tests confirmed elevated cortisol levels from stress, what Claudia called the accountability hormone that appears when women go into man mode. The Queen's Code journey ended where it began, with women learning to see and acknowledge the heroic nature in men, and men responding by becoming their best selves. As Bert welcomed Jack into their home with a handshake, it marked both an end and a new beginning, the continuation of a legacy that had transformed relationships for 25 generations and would continue to do so through Karen and Kimberly's commitment to sharing these insights with others. At its core, the Queen's Code offers a revolutionary perspective. The path to fulfilling relationships lies not in changing others, but in transforming our understanding of them. Through Kimberly and Karen's journey, Armstrong reveals that men and women aren't adversaries, but allies speaking different languages, motivated by different drives, and expressing love in fundamentally different ways. The transformation begins with a simple yet profound shift, giving up the right to emasculate men forever. This doesn't mean women must tolerate mistreatment or abandon their strength. Rather, it means approaching men with curiosity instead of judgment, understanding instead of criticism, and appreciation instead of demands. The language of heroes, provide, help, need, save, and hero, offers women a new vocabulary for communicating effectively with men. By speaking this language, women tap into men's natural desire to protect, provide, and be heroic. Men aren't defective women who need fixing. They're different beings with unique strengths and vulnerabilities. Similarly, understanding the nuances of sexual connection, from sexy tank fillers to jump starts to desserts, transforms physical intimacy from a battlefield to a dance of mutual pleasure and connection. When both partners understand what the other needs to feel desired and satisfied, their relationship deepens on every level. Perhaps most revolutionary is the approach to needs. By learning to communicate needs clearly and directly, without demands or manipulation, women create space for men to fulfill their natural provider instincts. And by acknowledging men as heroes, not just for grand gestures, but for daily acts of provision and protection, women inspire men to become their best selves. The Queen's Code isn't about women subjugating themselves to men or playing manipulative games. It's about creating partnerships where both people thrive, where feminine and masculine energies complement rather than compete, and where understanding replaces judgment. In a world increasingly divided by gender politics, Armstrong offers a path toward reconciliation, one relationship at a time.